Welcome to Thrivival 101, a fresh take on self-care for female mental health clinicians.
A podcast where we have the courage to talk about what actually supports and gets in the way of our self-care so that we can redefine what it truly means to take care of ourselves, our best tools, and thrive in this work. We are your hosts, Dr. Melissa Thiessen
and Dr. Karen Dick of Intentional Therapist. We're so happy to have you joining us today.
Well, today we're happy to be chatting with Liz Gray. Liz is a licensed clinical social worker who works primarily with highly sensitive teens and adults using EMDR and Santray therapy. Having worked in a variety of settings and as the owner of the alphabet soup of businesses, love that, Liz knows the importance of having good organizational systems in place and actually loves developing these systems. So much so, she earned the nickname Organization Queen from her colleagues. So perhaps it's not surprising then that she decided to combine her love of organization and helping others and start a new business called Organize and Thrive, where she provides mindset and systems coaching for overwhelmed therapists who are feeling scattered and unorganized. And I don't know if I've ever met a therapist like that, but I'm sure there's at least a few of them out there, or maybe all of us at one point or another. So we're really looking forward to learning more about you, Liz, and your business and how this all fits into self-care for therapists, because of course it is so closely linked to our self-care. So thank you so much again for joining us today, Liz.
Well, thank you for having me. And that is the best intro that I've ever heard about me. So I love how you put all the things together that I kind of have about me, and you made it sound so nice. So thank you for that.
Well, you're very welcome. And thank you for recognizing this really important need that so many of us have. So we realize that most likely when female clinicians think of self-care, the term organizational systems isn't necessarily the first thing that actually comes to mind. So we would love to hear your thoughts on how, in fact, organizational systems fit into self-care.
So I have a couple different thoughts on this question. The first thought that comes to my mind is that when we think of organizational systems, really it's a process of maintaining order. And so think about that. When we have order and rules, it can make us feel safe because there's predictability, consistency, containment. We know what to expect. So I really think of it instead of some big like, organization, systems, huge, overwhelming, scary, that actually the process of creating and or maintaining systems can be soothing. Not for everyone. For me personally, it is really soothing to create a system, to make a spreadsheet and color code. And I kind of get to like zone out a little bit and use my like perfectionistic qualities and be able to create something. And that for me is actually like really soothing. And I think a form of self-care. And I very much realize that not everyone thinks about it that way. And people might look at me like I have three heads sometimes, like, what? You like to organize? So I really just want to name that. It can be really big and scary for people too.
For sure. For sure.
I also will add that a lot of times you only really have to set up a system one time, and then you get to keep tweaking it and adapting. But it does, it's not like you have to, like the good news about a system, actually an organization, is once you figure out what works for you, it can be really, really easy to maintain. I think people just get really scared about the idea of creating something and setting something up and then make it into this big, huge thing that just continues to eat at them and overwhelm them.
Yeah, I think that makes so much sense, Liz. And, you know, it's so wonderful that there are people out there like you who have a passion for this. And it almost seems like as part of your own self-care, you find it, you know, just really a rewarding kind of soothing process. So nice that people like you are out there to help clinicians who perhaps, as you were suggesting, either don't kind of have that innate skill or just find it overwhelming? Because I certainly know when I've taken the time to put or develop organizational systems, the load it takes off me, it's quite a freeing experience. And I think it opens up space for our time in ways that allow us to spend our time on other things.
Yes, exactly.
So it's interesting, you know, I think despite the obvious benefits that exist, so many of us really avoid putting the time into developing organizational systems. And given that, you know, you work with so many people on this, I'm really curious to hear from you some of the barriers that get in the way of clinicians actually setting up those organizational systems in their practices.
Yeah, there are a couple that I see as the most common. The first one is just overwhelm. I see this so often that therapists get so overwhelmed by all the things that they have to do. And this idea of having to keep track of just everything in their life and their business and all, just all the stuff that they get, that they freeze. So it's like this overwhelm leads to paralysis in a lot of ways. And then of course, when you're in that space, you're not thinking about, oh, how can I best maximize my time and create a system? No, it's then survival. So I think this overwhelm really builds up and builds up and builds up, and then it just leads to doing nothing. And I see that that's oftentimes when people come to me, they're like, I just couldn't do it by myself anymore. And I would also say another one is time. A lot of the people who I work with are business owners, at least have one business, if not two or more. You're wearing so many hats as a clinician, as a human being, as sometimes a business owner, as a parent, a friend, fill in the blank. And just simply finding time to do all the things to set up the systems, to maintain the systems. You know, a lot of times I see therapists are just trying to keep their head above water, and oftentimes I would say, like, I don't know if I could say 100%, 99.999% of the time, the people I work with are unbelievable clinicians. They love the work that they do with their clients and are so good at it. And it's all the other stuff that gets in the way and then makes them in turn feel like, oh my gosh, like I'm an awful therapist. I'm an awful this and that, and are really hard on themselves. So it's this just really awful cycle that people find themselves in. I have a couple more, but I'll pause there in case there was anything you wanted to say.
Yeah, I can certainly appreciate the cycle that you've described. And, you know, full disclosure here, I've been there myself. And it's a slippery slope, right? I mean, before you know it, you're just kind of buried in these things. And as you say, it just gets too overwhelming. And we certainly have heard from a lot of the clinicians that we've talked to is just that internalizing it and the judgments that follow. And unfortunately, I think sometimes, and I'd be curious if you've noticed this as well, Liz, I think sometimes the judgments we make about ourselves cause us to kind of suffer in silence and even perhaps prevent us from actually reaching out to someone like you to say, you know what, I really need help with this.
100%. The shame, I think, that you're naming is so loud. And I've worked with therapists who are hundreds and hundreds of notes behind, and they're in terms of their documentation. And I've had people say, Liz, you're the first person I've ever been able to share the number with. And just to see, first of all, that I'm not going to, like, the audit police or the notes police are not going to come after them. And to see that I'm not judging them. In fact, I have so much compassion for how much distress this is causing them. And oftentimes that's the turning point for them to say, okay, I'm able to say this number out loud. I'm able to actually name what is so stressful, and I need some help and support. I can't do this by myself. And it's a really beautiful moment when that happens. It's devastating that someone has gotten to the point where they feel that much shame, because you're right. A lot of times we don't talk about this. And we think, oh my gosh, like everyone else has it together. I'm the only one. And actually, that is not true. If nothing else, someone listening to this, I want you to know that you are absolutely not alone in this.
And that is such an incredibly important message, Liz. And I'm so glad that you emphasized that. And I think absolutely the issue of getting behind on notes is just, I think, the quintessential example of how shame can so easily show up in a sense of being disorganized. And of course, it can come from so many different places why somebody might be getting behind on notes. And I think, of course, though, the importance of systems absolutely shows when we're talking about documentation of sessions. But of course, it's also relevant with tracking finances or even tracking a waiting list or things like this, right? Like there's so many different pieces that we can be applying systems to. And I think that, you know, your comment about people who have actually shared being hundreds of notes behind and just being able to name that and not have somebody judging them for it and really being able to like get that experience of, I face this really scary thing, just even the acknowledging where they're at and being able to see that like the world didn't come crumbling down as I did that. And so maybe there can start to be a way forward here. That's so, so incredibly valuable. Anyone who's listening, please know if you are feeling disorganized and behind, whether it's your notes or your finances or any other piece of your work or research, I think is another huge area, especially for many people who work in organizations or do research. I think that's another area that's ripe for feeling disorganized, I'm sure. So, so important just to normalize this experience. Absolutely. Liz, can you actually speak to that piece perhaps just a little bit about, do you notice any differences in terms of kind of organizational struggles that people might face if they work in an organizational setting, right? Like an agency or a university setting, for example, a hospital, as compared to somebody who's working in private practice? Because of course, I could see there could be pros and cons to each of those settings when it comes to being able to more easily set up organizational systems for ourselves.
Sure. And I would be curious, I would love to know if either of you could fill in the gaps, because I haven't worked in all these settings and I haven't worked with people in every one of these settings, but I can tell you what I've seen. I'll start with private practice. I think a lot of therapists go into a private practice to be their own boss, to be able to make all the rules and to not have to worry about, you know, all these extra things and people telling them what to do. And very quickly, they can find that it's really easy to get behind because there aren't people or entities holding them accountable. So it's this kind of catch-22. It's like really nice. Oh, yes, I don't have a boss. I don't have anyone looking over my shoulder. Yet when you don't have a boss, when you don't have someone saying, hey, I need you to meet these deadlines, then it's easy to say, okay, I'll do the note tomorrow. Okay, I'll call this person back tomorrow. And before you know it, you're so far behind and overwhelmed. So I think that in terms of private practice, I see a lot of people get really behind because it's really this idea of accountability that they don't have. I will say in agency settings, I think oftentimes the caseload is really high. And having worked in community mental health, I personally did not have a choice. I didn't have the ability to say, hey, this is my limit. I can't take any more than X clients. It doesn't matter. They just continue to put people on your caseload. And I don't want to speak for all agencies. I'll just tell you my own experience. It was my first job out of graduate school. And I was doing home-based therapy and kids who were in crisis. They had either just been hospitalized or being screened for hospitalization. So pretty high intense needs. And I was community-based. So I was going to their homes and their schools and driving all over. And I had, you know, at any given time, about 40 clients. And I remember thinking, oh, if I could just have 25, I'd be able to keep everything organized and together. But just the more that I got, it's like every single client that you have, it is exponentially more work and time. And it was so hard, even for me, who systems make me feel safe. And I enjoy creating and maintaining systems. I had a really, really hard time staying organized and, you know, even being able to hold boundaries in terms of my workday and how long I was spending on notes, because you're drained and exhausted. So it's most likely going to take longer to do things than if you're feeling energized. So yeah, those are just some thoughts. I'll pause there and then I have a couple more.
Yeah, I think, so Melissa and I have both worked in community mental health systems as well. And I think Melissa would agree with me in that we've seen the, kind of a similar situation to what you're describing, just really high caseloads. And, you know, I think clinicians then feeling like they have to make choices. And of course, right, their choice is to help their clients rather than document what they're doing. And, you know, I think your point is such an important one, Liz, because you who loves organizational systems and that you're able to develop those with some ease, even you struggle to do that in a setting where the caseloads were so high. And I think that is just so important for like all of us to recognize, right, that the systems we work in, they can absolutely impact our self-care and our ability to put things into place. And I think I wonder if encouraging therapists to kind of reach out to their supervisors in those situations, and if they can be courageous to kind of speak up and say, look, this is the situation, I'm falling behind on my notes, and can you help me find a solution to this?
Definitely, I agree with that. It's too much for it to all fall on you.
Yeah. And like Karen said, I think one of the huge challenges, of course, within an organizational setting is feeling comfortable and safe enough to be able to speak up when challenges are occurring, right? And of course, we recognize very much so that not everybody is going to be working within an organizational structure where they feel like they've got the safety and security to do that. Sadly, and this is really probably a separate topic and conversation, but really appreciate all those points, Liz, that there can be struggles in both types of settings, and they just maybe are going to show up in slightly different ways because of either the fast-paced nature often of organizational settings, and then kind of conversely, private practice can still also be very fast-paced, but the lesser accountability that might be present in a private practice setting then introduces new challenges.
Exactly. And I'll add that oftentimes when agencies are accepting Medicaid, for example, there's pretty strict guidelines for even documenting. And so that can take a lot longer to write each note, for example, than when you're in private practice. However, what I find for a lot of people in private practice, and I felt this way too at the beginning when I first had a practice, my own practice, that it's like, wait, I'm doing something wrong. I should be writing more. I'm missing something. What am I doing? So then it's this internal battle. And, you know, and also, even though at an agency or, you know, other organization, even though it can be a lot to do, at least you have a structure. At least you know, okay, this is how I write a note. Even though it takes me forever and I don't like it, at least I know what it is. But then when you go into your own practice, it's like there are a million different ways you can do it, and you don't have to really. There's so many, yeah, different options. And oftentimes it's a lot less that is needed from a private practice clinician in their notes. So it just gets into, I mean, I could go back and forth all day. It's just a lot. It's overwhelming.
Exactly. I think this just, again, really normalizes why this becomes so challenging, and maybe not is always a challenge, but why there can be recurring challenges when it comes to our systems, whether we're talking about documentation of sessions or anything else that is kind of a task that needs to be repeated in our work days, right? So we're also really curious, Liz, and because we've alluded to this a little bit already, we're wondering if you've noticed any differences perhaps that might pop up for female clinicians specifically compared to our male counterparts, or at least female identifying clinicians. And even just curious, Because I'm assuming it's largely women who are probably reaching out to you, but maybe not exclusively. So I would just love to know any what your experience has been and if there are any differences that stand out.
Well, you just named it exactly. I would say I primarily work with women, mm-hmm. But I have worked with a couple of men. Yeah, this is a really interesting one. When I sit and think about it, something that I've noticed is that a lot of the women who have reached out to me and who I work with were diagnosed with ADHD, autism, found out that they are highly sensitive later in life. And so it's looking at their life, although as their coach or consultant, it's not my job, you know, I'm not their therapist, right? So we're not looking necessarily through the lens of like, oh, my whole childhood, but what I can help them do is kind of look at their work and their work environments and, you know, their productivity and all that, like through the lens of, oh, now that I understand kind of how my brain works, these are actually some things that I need to help and to support me. So I don't know if that is fully answering your question, but I would say that a lot of people, it's the sudden shift for them of, wow, things make sense now. The reason why I have a trouble with organization or why I forget things or why I can't keep up with the system or to-do list is because of this thing. And so that's actually it. I think oftentimes, I don't want to say all the time, it can be such a relief to find out like, okay, this makes sense. And now what do I do about it?
That's such an interesting observation that you've made, Liz, because it actually does make me wonder if receiving a diagnosis actually could make it easier for people to reach out, because now it's kind of named, it makes sense, right? We know that folks with ADHD, for example, organization is often one of the challenges that come with that condition. So I could see how actually having a diagnosis might actually help women give themselves permission to kind of reach out for help. So, so interesting.
I just wanted to add as well that I think it's really interesting what you mentioned, Liz, about women often getting diagnosed later in life, whether it's ADHD or being on the autism spectrum, or even just discovering that they're more highly sensitive. And that also really seems to fit, especially in terms of the ADHD diagnosis, because of course we know that often ADHD looks different in girls versus boys, right? And so growing up, girls may be in fact struggling with ADHD symptoms, but it doesn't get diagnosed or it doesn't get just seen in the same way as it might in boys. And so it would make sense that a woman could go through all of her schooling, have these struggles, but they're never officially recognized. And then just sort of go into your professional career, just sort of thinking, oh, there's just these things that I'm not good at. And I just kind of have to keep struggling in silence again with them when actually, no, there's maybe some like really good reasons why these are challenges. And thus there, most importantly, there can be strategies to help us combat those challenges.
Exactly. Oh, and you made me think of something that oftentimes women will have had to mask a lot of these struggles and symptoms throughout their life, like you were just saying, Melissa. But men oftentimes have to mask their sensitivity from when they're a child. So just kind of a different way of looking at it too, that it's more acceptable, even though there's a lot that is not appreciated in our culture, but it's more acceptable for a woman to be sensitive than a man. So just thinking about the double standards in some ways.
Yeah, I think that is such a valid point. And it is often just very interesting to think about some of the gender socialization aspects and how they influence us in so many different ways.
I just want to jump in with one other question that you thought that you both reminded me of, which is, I think a few months ago, I came across a study that was actually looking at documentation responsibilities in physicians, and that especially with the advent of electronic medical records, women physicians were particularly being impacted. And the hypothesis was that women physicians are more likely to have their patients reaching out to them between sessions, for example, are more likely to maybe have longer conversations with their patients while they're meeting with them, all of which is just going to increase the amount of documentation that's going to be required, right? So I'm not aware of any research specifically comparing those sorts of requests for mental health clinicians, but you could see how potentially there could be an extrapolation to mental health clinicians as well. And I just think this really is just all very relevant for the reflections that you're sharing, Liz.
So Liz, we'd love to hear from your perspective if there are some early warning signs that maybe clinicians could be on the lookout for to suggest, maybe they could use a bit of support organizing themselves, their practices, or whether they be in public or private settings. Because, I think ideally, right, we'd love to address this sooner rather than waiting until we are totally overwhelmed and things have gotten so bad that we feel like it's a pretty big hole to dig out of.
Oh, yes, I have a lot of thoughts on this one. So I'll start by sharing my biggest warning sign, which is physical clutter. When my house starts to look like a tornado zone, that is when I have to stop and say, okay, what am I stressed out about? Because it's kind of this cycle that I don't always notice right away, but I notice when it has hit. And since I was in high school, I've been saying like stress equals mess. Because when I'm stressed out, it gets messy, and then the mess causes more stress. And then finally I get to a breaking point where I'm like, I need to clean and organize before I can actually do anything. So all that to say, don't do what I do, right? Still, many decades into my life. And that's the one thing I'm still working through. But in all seriousness, if you notice that your office, your desk, your house starts to get really cluttered and feel messy, that might be a point to just pause and say, okay, what's going on? Would it be helpful? Would I feel a little bit better if I cleaned up a little bit and organized? And that way it's like, for me, I really like that having a clean space gives my brain space to be able to do things. So that's one. I would say another is, if you notice that you're forgetting things, if you're losing things, if you're just overall in a more frazzled state, those could be warning signs. I know for me, I'm more likely to, I'm not a very clumsy person. I don't get hurt a lot, but when I do get hurt or when I'm making just kind of careless mistakes, that can definitely be an indication that, oh, okay, I'm really overwhelmed. I think I need to pause and slow down and see what's going on or reach out to this person for support. So that's another one. I'd say if people start noticing that something seems a little bit different, like if your clients are noticing, right? Like some of the things are really internal that we know, like it could be an internal state of overwhelm and feeling frazzled where other people may not necessarily know. But when it starts kind of creeping into your relationships and into your work, that's definitely a time where it might be helpful, again, to pause and to evaluate. And when I say that clients might notice, it could be double booking a session or being late to a session or forgetting, just getting really behind on phone calls or emails, whereas in the past, you were more on top of it. It could be just being a little disheveled. People can tell, right? They can tell when you're just kind of like flustered and frazzled. So if you come into a session and you're like, that's a little different than like, oh, your calm presence. So that, and then I'd also say another one with clients is if you notice that it's harder to keep your mind focused on the sessions. So if your mind starts wandering during the session of, oh shoot, I forgot to make that phone call, or, oh no, oh my gosh, like the thing my client just said just made me remember this thing. Like if it's really hard for you to stay present, first of all, no judgment. It happens to all of us. But if it's happening more often, or if it's becoming more about the to-dos and the things that don't generally creep into your brain during a session, definitely notice that. And then speaking of that, just when you feel like your brain is about to explode because you are holding so many ideas and things in your head, and you have these big ideas, or it's like little things that you have to do, whatever it is, when it starts to feel like you probably can't keep any more inside of your brain, that would be another warning sign as well.
I remember, I don't know how many of our listeners are familiar with the Far Side cartoon, but there was one cartoon I remember that just stood out for me so well. And it's a classroom setting, and there's a student there raising their hand and just saying, you know, excuse me, teacher, my brain is full. And I think we've all been there where we feel like, oh my gosh, there is not one more thing that can go in this head without some stuff starting to fall out.
So Liz, you mentioned so many great indicators of, okay, this is maybe something that I'm having trouble staying on top of. So what would be like the place for people to start, right? What is something that people could start doing today, this week, to just help them start to get even just a little bit more of some organized systems in place for themselves?
So two different ideas. One is to set a timer, 20 minutes, and just everything that's in your brain, get out of your brain, do a brain dump. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of my superpowers. I love to sit with people when they do this process, because I have them get it out of their brain, and then I'm able to organize it by category and help them kind of make sense of all of it. So that's a really cool process. But you could do this without me. You could just do it on your own and really just get it out of your brain, and then take a little time away from it. Like, get it out, move on, do something else, and then come back to it and see what stands out. What are the things that have to be done right away? And what are the things that you're like, oh, actually, I don't want to do this, and I don't really care about this. Or I can, you know, give that to this person to do. Like, I can delegate it. So that would be one thing. And then I think also having some kind of accountability system. That has been huge for me. And I'll say that this really shifted for me during the pandemic. I found that a lot of things that came really easily to me in the past, once the pandemic hit, it was really, really hard for me to stay focused during my sessions. It was hard for me to write my notes, because as soon as I got up from my chair, I'm like, I don't want to go back and write my notes. So things that I'd never really struggled with before, I did. And what I have found is that having some external, well, I think a combination of internal and external accountability. So the internal could be like, ooh, I'm going to reward myself with, you know, this piece of chocolate or a sticker. I mean, I know some of this sounds kind of silly, but like, it works for kids, so it works for us as adults. sometimes having a checklist and being able to like physically check off, okay, I did this note. Great. I'm, you know, to me, that is exciting. I realize for other people, they don't care. But I love being able to check something off, or it could be on a piece of paper, crossing it out, highlighting it. What I have found is there is a program called FocusMate, and it has been the most amazing thing that I've ever used. Probably it's body doubling. So basically you go onto a session, and it's either a 25, a 50, or a 75 minute session. You sign up ahead of time and you get paired with a random person somewhere from like all around the world. I've worked with really cool people like in Australia, New Zealand, and, you know, around the United States. And basically you do a really quick check-in, say, hey, how are you today? What are you going to work on? And then I'll usually say like, I'm going to do my 5 notes from, you know, my sessions today. Okay, great. And then you both do your own thing. And then you come back at the end and you check in or check out and see how you did. And it is such a cool way. Like for me, I currently see clients 3 days a week. So I have a recurring FocusMate event in my schedule that every Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, I have my session at the end of my day. And I know I'm going to get my notes done in that 25 minute chunk. Some people might need longer, and that's okay. But that's been really helpful. And I've started using it for other areas in my life. So you can use it not just for work, but people, you know, if they're students and are studying, or some people are like, I'm going to go vacuum during this time, or I'm going to go wash my dishes. And so I've been using it more for like, I'm going to sit down and write this email for my, you know, for my email list during this time, or I'm going to work on this thing. So I've been able to kind of expand what I'm using it for. And that's been super helpful.
That just sounds like such a neat program, Liz. I have never heard of it. And you said it's called Focus Mate?
Yeah, I can share the link with you. I actually was able to start an Organize and Thrive group through Focus Mate. So I'll give you the link and people can register. And let me just say that Focus Mate, it's free for up to 3 sessions a week. And then it's like, they just increased it, maybe $6 or $7 a month for unlimited sessions. So it's pretty affordable. And if you join using the link that I gave, and I'm not an affiliate or anything, I just want to put it out there. Like, this is just something that's really, really cool. And I believe in, but if you join the Organize and Thrive group, when you get matched up, the first people you're matched up are people in our group. If there's no one available from Organize and Thrive, then you'll be matched up with a random person. But yeah, I'll send that over to you.
That is just so neat and just so interesting too, being able to meet different people, right? That are obviously needing that external kind of accountability as well. I think it's just so validating. I just love that. And I also wanted to just touch quickly on your thoughts about chocolate or stickers. Melissa and I, a big part of what we believe is it's just important to have kind of a lightness, a humorous part of ourselves and connecting with that. And, you know, I kind of like the idea of getting a gold sticker for doing something well, you know, I'm that's not beneath me in any way. So I think that's just such a neat idea.
Yes. And I loved being a student. So not being a student anymore is not always the most pleasant. So yeah, especially being an A student and getting those stickers, I agree. It's like being able to give that to ourselves can be really kind.
Absolutely. And I think that the key point for sure that comes through in your message as well, Liz, is like, figure out what's going to work for you, right? So for some people, it is going to be stickers. For some people, it is going to be a little treat, like consumable, like chocolate or something, right? For others, it's going to be having another person providing accountability with this kind of, you know, co-working session, for example. And all of these things are totally okay. It's really about finding what is the carrot that is going to work for you. Because the reality is, when we're doing tasks that are not particularly pleasant, sometimes we need some external motivation, right? And of course, intrinsic internal motivation is usually going to be better in the long run, but there's nothing wrong with using something external to help us get the momentum going.
Yep. And it's a system. It's going to be different for everyone, and it's probably going to change over time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Depending on, yeah, your situation, where you are in life, what kind of job you're doing, where you're living. I mean, there's so many different factors. So just know that what works now, it's probably going to need to be tweaked and changed, and that's okay.
Yeah. And just quickly to go back to your comments about the pandemic, I think that's so important for us to be normalizing for everyone as well, right? We all had to make such significant shifts start in the beginning of the pandemic, throughout the pandemic. And I don't know if it's accurate to say we're post-pandemic yet, but you know, wherever we are in this time, I think the reality is that maybe even what we've been doing for the past couple of years isn't necessarily what is still going to keep working for us, even if we are continuing to work in the same ways that we did early, you know, earlier in the pandemic. Yeah, I think just being able to recognize that these things do shift and that it's worth regularly, maybe even building in time to reflect and just, as you said, pause and ask ourselves, is this working for me or not?
Yeah. And I, you know, I think that's so much in line with the messaging Melissa and I have just regarding self-care, that, you know, that's a dynamic process, and what makes sense today based on our current circumstances may need to be really adjusted and look very different 6 months from now, even a month from now. So So Liz, it's just been so great talking to you and hearing about organizational systems. And, you know, I also really appreciate you talking a little bit about some of your struggles, because, you know, I think we do need to start having these conversations as a way of normalizing the struggles that all of us have. And I think only by doing that, we're really going to be able to find some solutions and support one another. Where can people go if they'd like to find out more about Organize and Thrive and about the various resources that you offer?
Yeah, so I have a website. It's organizeandthrive.com. There's a dash in between each word. So organize-and-thrive.com. Of course, that was the only, you know, domain that was available. I have a Facebook group that has, as of now, about 2,500 therapists in it. So come join us over there. It's just called Organize and Thrive. You can just type that into Facebook, or you can follow me on Instagram. It's at Organize and Thrive One.
And Liz, you mentioned the co-working through FocusMate that people could learn more about if they check out your website, I presume.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if that's on my website. So thank you for...
Well, yes.
I need to go add that. Yes, I need to definitely add that. Yeah, but that's another great way to connect. I can also share my direct scheduling link so that people can schedule a session with me if they want to. And everyone has their own, so you can share with other people.
Fantastic. Yeah, we'll definitely include all of that in the show notes for folks. So just before we officially wrap up, anything else you might want our listeners to know that we haven't necessarily covered yet, or maybe something we have that you just really want to emphasize?
Be kind and compassionate to yourself. This is hard. Living in this world is hard. Being a clinician is hard. Owning your own business or working for someone else is hard. You're wearing so many hats. And I just want you to know that you're doing a really great job and that it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to say, you know what? I can't do it all by myself. And I need to think about either the things that I don't like to do or that maybe I'm just not great at. How can I, you know, whether it's, again, delegating it out to someone, realizing, oh, maybe I actually don't have to do it this way. Asking for help, you know, having someone work with you, whatever it is, like, it's okay that you are not holding all of it. In fact, you can't hold all of it.
Yeah, I think that is just such an important message, Liz. And thank you for sharing that with us and our listeners. And of course, we always like ending with the same question for our guests. So Liz, we'd like to hear from you about maybe one of your best non-conventional or non-traditional self-care practices that you want to share with our listeners.
Oh, I have a good one for you. So it's actually within the last year. I don't think, maybe it's just been the 6 months or so. I have started doing pole dancing, and it's fun. I'm feeling more confident about myself. I'm gaining strength and actually like some muscles. I mean, it's hard. It's a workout. It's pole fitness essentially. And what I really like about it is that there's this accountability. I've never been able to stick with any kind of workout or exercise because first, I just don't really love to work out. I'd rather sit at home. But when I've gone to classes, you know, in the moment I'm fine, but it's like, there's nothing that's holding me or keeping me there. So with these classes, it's leveled. So you start with the fundamentals. So it's like, you know, 10 classes of like, you're basically level one. And then after that, it's level 2 through 15, essentially. And each of them is a 10-week section. So you go and each week builds upon the previous one, and each level builds upon the previous level. So I really like it. I'm in level 4 right now. And it's just really helpful that I go and like, okay, every week, you know, 7:45 on Wednesday night, this is my class. These are the people in it. This is the teacher. So there's lots of different pieces that really work for me.
It's so interesting that it sounded like there's something about the levels and working through the levels that was particularly motivating for you. And it's interesting, as you talk about that, I could see how that could be motivating for a lot of us, right? I mean, obviously, we've gone through university or college to become therapists. And I think there is something about that kind of focus on achievement and accomplishment. And if we can use that for good and not evil, to support good habits instead of kind of this perfectionism and unrelenting standards, I think that's just such a great, great tool for us to stay motivated in doing something that's just for us and helps us feel really good.
Yeah, and I love too, Liz, how I would imagine there's such a sense of being able to notice those improvements, like just in your own body, right? In terms of strength and being able to do different sorts of movements and things. I know many years ago, I tried a pole dance in class, I think once or twice, and it is so much fun and surprisingly so difficult for sure. So I love how there is also this kind of probably tangible aspect for you of seeing the progress. And I know Karen and I often talk about how, as rewarding as our jobs are as mental health clinicians, there often is tangible indicators of progress that aren't always there for us as clearly as there are in other types of professions or other types of pursuits, right? So I think this really, really speaks to a lot of that as well. So love that example. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah. And I hope that anyone who's ever thought about pole dancing, go try it. I hope you have a studio near you because it's been really fun. Really fun for me.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Liz, and sharing your thoughts and expertise with us about organizational systems. And let's keep in touch.
Sounds good. Thanks, everyone.
And thank you for joining us as well.
If you would like to learn more about how you can thrive in your work as a female mental health clinician, please visit us online at intentionaltherapist.ca, where you can discover more resources, read about our 4Cs framework, and sign up for our free newsletter.
We look forward to connecting with you there and creating a courageous community of like-minded women.